Synchronicity is a meaningful coincidence. Basically, it's when these two events correspond in a way that seems highly improbable, highly unlikely, but also deeply meaningful for that person. It relates to some aspect of their life in a way that feels significant and purposeful and intended, almost by some other kind of consciousness. Now, coincidence happened for sure, but this is kind of in the realm of almost deja vu, where it seems like there's something more to it, particularly when the synchronicities drop all at once, and there's one after another, in a way that feels something else is going on, something bigger. That's what started this case, and that's what plagued us throughout the case.
Welcome to the show, Connor Randall. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. You guys are really, it's cool to be here. It's always fun to chat. So here we are.
I really like that little ghost light that you have behind you.
Thanks.
Where can I get one of those?
I think it's from it's a Halloween decoration from Target.
Oh my goodness.
A couple of years ago.
That's happened to me before too. Mm-hmm. They stay out all year. Well, so if you'd like to introduce yourself by any means that you feel necessary, just how you would want to, you know, introduce yourself to our listeners.
My name's Connor Randall. On online platforms and stuff, I go by Connor J. Randall with my middle initial. I work kind of a double life. I work as a legislative clerk for half the year, and then the other half of the year I spend adventuring around on paranormal expeditions, and born and raised in Colorado, worked at the Stanley Hotel, was kind of one of their main paranormal people for about 7 years, high school and college age, and then am now heading into more paranormal documentary work. So most people in this field maybe possibly recognize from Hellier.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm one of the main dudes in that, sort of co-executive producer of that whole story, and really just love paranormal experiments, love thinking about this stuff, documenting it, and telling paranormal stories, kind of like you guys.
Yes, for sure. And I know you have your own show, Spirits of the Stanley, I believe is how I'm saying it, right?
Yeah. When we were at when Carl and I worked at the Stanley Hotel, we kind of made that along with Michelle Tate. That covered like 7 months of our time at the Stanley out of the whole like 4 years we were there. So, yeah.
I've seen a few episodes and it was very compelling, I must say. And I know that we watched Hellier and we were both just like, it was so refreshing to see something that wasn't overproduced and was just natural. You know, there were times where I was like, oh my gosh, what's about to happen? And then there were times where it was like, you know, a slow burn, but that's exactly exactly. And
it was a labor of love. That was like a whole, it documented like 2 years of our lives basically.
Yeah.
And it's been a blast. And it really, honestly, I try and say this in like the most humble way I can, because it really, I'm just like happy to be here at all, but it's like, it kind of gained a life of its own, mm-hmm. and like just keeps going and going, and people are fascinated by the story. So we're really pleased with that.
We loved it. I've been obsessed with the whole Indrid Cold story for so long. We just covered Mothman actually last week, but I'm honestly like, we need to do a whole episode on that in its own. That's a whole that's a whole other episode on its own. But
you can call me for background research or have me on again or something.
Oh,
for that.
Sure,
that would be amazing.
Spent too much time looking into that.
That sounds awesome. Yes, thank you so much. What was I thinking about when you were talking about Hellier? How it ended. So are y'all doing further seasons of that show?
No, I don't think we've officially said in any format.
Okay. So I was going to say, I don't think they are officially saying anything yet.
I was pretty antsy for some continuation of that.
I will say that's kind of the beautiful thing of like, we did the whole thing ourselves, so we can, we're not waiting for a green light from anybody. It's just us. So yeah, things are good.
So something that I think we got from that show, which I guess maybe we were late to the game, was the whole Estes method situation, which we're very much amateurs at doing.
To put it really mildly, actually, like there's amateurs and then there's like us.
Yeah.
Like, to put it in the most mild way possible.
I think I've done it maybe like 20 times, but not
More than most. That's for sure.
Not any. I think I've never given it a full, like hour long dedication, which I think is kind of what I was gathering from you. It's what you kind of need to do. Just give it more time. Don't try to rush it. Don't try to force anything to happen in 30 minutes.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, that's appreciated. The whole thing with Estes is, well, I don't necessarily want to go into like this whole long backstory and talk for 5 minutes, but
definitely do it.
Estes started simply as a confirmation bias eliminator. So in terms of the paranormal, what we're dealing with a lot more than people care to admit or realize is confirmation bias. And inherently, by going into a location and trying to approach or talk with a ghost of this person, that person, we're already sort of feeding ourselves the answers in a sense. So one of our things that we started doing, and this was in 2015, 2016, at the Stanley Hotel, it was a weird job. I was the resident paranormal investigator. So I grew up just like 45 minutes or an hour away from the hotel. And my first job was there. I loved ghosts from an early age and just like wanted to be around that place because of the lore. Mm-hmm. And I was like a history guide, like concierge person in the beginning. And then eventually became like one of the main ghost people. So with Carl, Michelle Tate and myself, what people would do is they would pay like $50 and it would be like the whole paranormal tour. And we would take them for like 6 hours, just all over the place.
Gosh.
So we were very used to, I mean, we're talking like 3-4 days a week, taking these groups of people and watching confirmation bias take effect, which isn't necessarily any of their faults. We're the ones who just told them these ghost stories and then we're like, now go find the ghost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So as we started to get more comfortable in the position over the years, we started experimenting with different things and with different groups and with different, and it was a really, really fascinating look at a long-term paranormal location and actually documenting different catches. I don't like using the word evidence necessarily, but just like things over the years. And B, it was an opportunity for us to try different methods. We already, in terms of like the scientific method, if you try to apply that to the paranormal, you're going to fail every time because there's inherently too many variables to do anything with. But at least we had the same constant location and the same constant stories that people were hearing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, one of the things that we did one night is, I think it was Carl who really kind of had this initial thought, was like, well, we have this spirit box, which is most popular from Ghost Adventures, basically scanning through radio frequencies really quickly. Mm-hmm. And we would play it every now and then. People would find it obnoxious sometimes, things like that. Carl was like, well, why doesn't one person just listen to it? And they just say what they're hearing, which turned into more of a revolutionary idea than it ever initially sounded like, because we were like, well, just plug in some Apple earbuds. And we just kind of took turns like listening to it and saying what we were hearing. And then we got a couple of interesting responses that were like, oh, maybe that's fun. And then we kind of kept going on with our night. And then we were like, let's try that again, but let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. And over like 6 months, we developed what we eventually called the Estes method, because we invented it, quote unquote, in Estes Park, Colorado, mm-hmm. Which is where the Stanley Hotel's at. And we didn't want to name it after ourselves. It seemed weird. So we had the Estes method, and that's sort of now gone on to all these different like paranormal shows and things like that. And then of course we utilize it in Hellier as well, because it's kind of one of our signature methods to try and contact, quote unquote, the other. Typically ghosts, sometimes aliens, mm-hmm. whatever's out there.
Interdimensional beings, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We've definitely had some interesting experiences, I think, whenever we've done it. I'm just really dipping my toes into that whole, I've been very skeptical, though, always just could not get enough of the paranormal of all kinds, but never had any experiences or anything like that. So it's always been hard for me to totally be all in. I think that's probably the same for even you who has had experiences, probably. But so this has been interesting, and I'm trying to, you know, get more in touch with that kind of more spiritual, I suppose, side where, yeah. I don't know. So this has been an interesting experience for me where we've had some things happen, and I've been like, I don't know if I can deny that. I can't deny that that had some significance here.
You're the one who heard it.
Right.
That's cool.
It must be pretty, like, what is it that made you, there had to have been some event that happened that made you think, I've got to dig deeper into this and figure out a way to try to communicate better. What was that? Was it a culmination?
It was within sort of the first three times of trying the method that I was the one, for whatever reason, who was like hearing more things than other people. And in the same sense, I'm, you know, kind of a skeptic per se, I suppose, in that I'm not psychic. I don't necessarily claim to be. Maybe we all are in some aspect if we tune in correctly, but I don't believe in mediums. I don't, you know, I think I'm kind of on that same wavelength with you. It's like, this is a huge monumental claim. And I think that when we're dealing with the largest question of humanity is what happens to us after we die, that's not something to be messed around with,
right.
In my mind necessarily. So it's hard to see some things in this field sometimes, mm-hmm. but I will say, just from like a moralistic standpoint, but I will say, the first time I tried it, there were about five responses where it seemed like I was conversing with Carl and Michelle outside of the box. And I knew that I couldn't hear, but it's the same thing as any other paranormal story where it's like, well, I know what I experienced, but how do you portray that to somebody else? Mm-hmm. And so then the game became, how do we make sure that there is no way that mm-hmm. you can hear what's outside?
Yeah.
That's obviously the first skeptical thing. It's like, well, he can hear what they are saying, you know, whatever.
Right.
So it's like, well, I got, I'm a drummer in some bands down here in Denver. So I play with my band and I play drums and I have these gigantic headphones that block out like 25 decibels of sound. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, let's bring those up and then let's bring a blindfold. So you can't even read lips. Mm-hmm. And in trying to get rid of that bias, what we sort of unintentionally did, I think, now that I have a couple of years to sort of look back in a lot of sessions under my belt, I think that we sort of inadvertently did is we triggered a sort of trance-like state on the individual who was listening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, a typical, like, I don't know if you ever fully reach that stage of like whatever sort of hypnagogic, hypnopompic kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But if you have somebody who's in on this box and I mean, if you've tried it with those same kind of methods, you kind of see what I'm saying, that you get lost in it.
Yes.
And you're just like surrounded by this sound. And
like waves, we've noticed, almost. Like I think about that. Waves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like a wave. Yeah.
Yeah.
When somebody is really in it, is what we like to say, we'll notice some similarities. People's eyes start watering. Mm-hmm. They start to rock back and forth, which is real, like, psychologist level stuff of like this person is entering some sort of trance like state. So what happens then if somebody's sitting there listening for these voices and they're conscious or subconscious mind, however people want to portray that, is entering into something else in an attempt for communication, it seems like it reaches another level sometimes.
For sure. Mm-hmm. We just talked about last night, I think, about how meditation is used as a way to reach higher points and speak to, you know, people like your spirit guide, for example, whether you subscribe to that belief or not. You know, I've been reading about it lately and I'm like, I might try this one meditation technique where I go, you know, to this place and meet my spirit guide. But you know, it's the same theory of just getting yourself to that just more elevated level. And I guess I started to think maybe that's the key to all of this paranormal stuff, is reaching a higher, elevated, mindful place where, you know, we're more open to things that perhaps when we're stuck in this world of just, you know, everything that's around us is just stressing us out. By the way, mm-hmm. Happy Trump is out of office week. I was on your Twitter. I was on your Twitter earlier and I was like, thank goodness. I was like, yes. Like,
oh, he's not one of those.
Let's celebrate this a little bit. But I forgot to do it at the beginning of our interview. Yeah. It's a good way to start because I was like, God bless. We got to get out of this just stress ball that we've been in. And so, you know, getting into a more elevated place, I think would help all of us. But
yeah,
especially
there is a sort of collective sense of alleviation, like pouring over the nation right now.
For sure. As so many people I've talked to, they're like, I feel like I can breathe again. And I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. my God, see?
Right. Like, we can just go about our lives and, like, not think about the president. Like,
yeah, like, all the time.
Like, a tweet isn't going to be breaking news at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird thing.
Yeah.
What has been your most, perhaps, like, life-changing moment that you have had with anything having to do with either your work in the hotel or before that or the Estes Method or Hellier or your own show, whatever. What has there been that's really just shook your boots?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. In terms of like the main precipice moment, when I was younger, I had a couple of experiences that triggered the interest in ghosts, you know, and that sort of spiraled into a whole thing. Mm-hmm. I have yet to have, boom, here's a human apparition standing in front of me. But in that, you know, 7, 8, 9-year-old state, having or like seeing some things in my room or like corner of it, things like that happened. But then some of the bigger, huger moments came at the Stanley, working there. Like, it's funny, I can say this now because it's like, what, are they going to fire me? Like, I don't work there anymore. But the most stuff definitely happened when I was by myself or when nobody else was around. And in a sense, I think that sort of adds some credence to the idea of intelligent spirits, where it's like, yeah, we're friends, you know, like it's fine. I'm chill. There was a weird sense of like feeling a little bit bad, asking 3 nights a week for these intelligent beings, these seemingly people, to come out and like do circus tricks for tourists. That's weird. Mm-hmm. And I was like happy to be paid to like be doing the paranormal, of course.
For sure.
And have the opportunity to do this case study, but those experiences, I think, sort of walking around by myself, locking up, hearing footsteps behind me. There was one night where I was standing with my friend Alex, clearly sitting up in the balcony. Right below us is a female giggle that went on for like 5 seconds, like right there. And it's just this is not somebody that's in front of me, but I hear her right here. And we're in a lockdown building. And it's cool because the Stanley is like all sorts of outbuildings. So we had keys to everything. So we were all over the place. And then also just hearing people's stories. There are still stories that I remember from even when I was the concierge that change the way they sort of help guide my ongoing paranormal theories. Because things, you know, as you guys know, that could change week by week. Like there was one guy who somebody seriously walks out and the Stanley, it's weird to all of us paranormal people that the Stanley isn't just focused on that. Like they get all about The Shining and the film festivals and all these Dumb and Dumber fans come up there. And honestly, a ton of people are up there because it's like a business conference center too.
Yeah.
Like they're just chilling at the at the toothpaste convention, you know? And so it's like, they're, so like they're there. And I had people like that walk up to me and be like, it was the strangest thing. I saw a little boy sitting on the edge of my bed when I walked out of my shower.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh,
that's a little boy.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Not something that people are thinking about. They're not out looking for ghosts and they're just appearing in front of them. And that's like, that's a cool,
for sure,
beautiful thing when it happens, I suppose.
I mean, it's like all of our dreams.
Ashley,
well,
are you jealous?
Yes.
I was just thinking.
It may not be Bianca's dream, but I know it's, I'm like, it's slightly mine and it hurts my feelings a little bit. But, but you know, I guess that's just how it goes. Because that, and it's more compelling for sure whenever it's somebody like that, that is just some random person, not looking for anything. I heard your story about the drawers all being open at one point and at the when somebody was in the room, and that always seems to happen, and it is so just the most terrifying thought. I don't know why that scares me so much.
It's a strange invasion of privacy,
for
I suppose.
Sure.
There's something there.
Mm-hmm. Whether that's like poltergeist activity or whatever that is, it's definitely creepy. But okay. Well, have you built on the Estes method any further than taking it to, is it secret?
No, not necessarily. We, I think that I am in a fortunate position to like have people like send me sessions and stuff like that. So I, Carl and myself sort of like took it with Hellier and it just sort of like became this whole thing. So people will send sessions and recordings and stuff. And obviously I wasn't there. I wasn't the one on the box. What do I really know? But I can at least document similarities and responses and things like that. So I'm coming up with a sort of growing list of what constitutes successful sessions and unsuccessful sessions. And that's kind of part of the important thing, is data points that even aren't hits, you know, like you have to think about it as like a whole battleship map, you know, not just talking about the good things. So I've enjoyed collecting that data. In terms of the actual method itself, we've tried all sorts of variants. We've tried different experiments with recording the box while one person's listening and then going back and seeing what we're hearing and what we're not. I mean, we have instances in there where there are words that the person is spouting out as coming across the box that are clearly, and I sit there and I do this audio analysis on these things. They're not anywhere within the spectrum of that radio spirit box feed. Where did this word come from?
Yeah.
Which brings in whole other thoughts where it's like, well, that's for some reason, the subconscious is throwing that into that person's brain and they're saying it for some reason, like what's going on there?
Right.
We've tried sessions where we've done distance stuff. And that's one of those experiments is in Spirits of the Stanley, where one person's talking to a baby monitor across the building with somebody else. Like, can they throw their responses?
Yeah.
And we've tried different debunking experiments and had one of the other things we did was on an episode of a YouTube series called Haunt Me, that we called the Estes Chamber, where I broadcast an FM frequency over across a whole building with like a radio transmitter and picked up on that within the session. And so we're all about, you know, trying different things. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not married to just purely this is how you do it.
Right.
But I will say that I've noticed some similarities between things that ways that kind of work, I guess I should say.
What are those things that make it that you seem to that seem to be the most successful methods?
There's things like if the individual is in comfort is kind of key, which is really hard to reach sometimes if you're sitting in like an abandoned mental hospital and it's like,
oh, you're
okay,
not comfy there.
yeah. And so we started even like, and I recommend bringing along like a camping chair, like something that you're like good to hang out in, good to sit around for 45 minutes or an hour. You should not be keeping track of time. You can let the people on the outside do it. Find a good way to wake yourself up. One of our friends named Ryan suggested one recently that's like, because if you tap on somebody's shoulder and they're really into it, it'll freak you out. And it's hilarious.
Yes, it does.
Right, but it's scary. So we've started even implementing sometimes smells, you know, like throwing a scent underneath the person's nose to sort of more gently awaken them from that state.
That's great.
Let yourself get lost in it. And one thing that I always I notice a lot of people doing this is a lot of people will sort of edit or narrate what they're hearing, where it's easy to do, but if they're hearing something, they'll be like, okay, I hear a female voice. It sounded like she was whimpering. And
oh,
she said,
yeah. Yes. I see what you're saying.
It's like, don't do that.
No.
No editorials. Just you're nothing but a megaphone in that moment. You're just spouting it off the second you hear it.
I can't imagine how you could even have the wherewithal to be able to narrate and figure out what's
and
being said
for it, yeah.
You know, because that's really I think that Bianca has gotten frustrated doing it where mm-hmm. she's like, there's just things being said that I just can't quite sure. catch them,
right,
you know?
Right, it just like goes so quick and I'm like, wait, what was that? And I want to like mm-hmm. hold on to that, like, what was that? I keep trying to figure it out, and then yeah. I gotta like let it go
yeah.
and go on to the next thing.
It's hard. I always try to tell people to sort of visualize themselves on a surfboard and the radio waves or the waves
Love
and you
that.
See little fish jumping out. When you see it, you say it. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like looking for the next one. Like
sure.
you're going on.
Love
you're
that.
Moving.
Yeah. The most yeah. successful ones have always been when I was able to just be as the most like relaxed, pretty much just jello, you know, I have to lay mm-hmm. down and just like try to get as comfortable as possible. But yeah,
we had a really cool session where I like, I used to smoke. So, but I still vape. So I had moved it and because it was in front of the camera that we were in front mm-hmm. of, and I moved it. And then Ashley said it moved. And I was like, what moved? I was like,
there's like strange situational yeah. awareness, isn't yeah. there?
Yes, 100%.
Like, you can see that it gets into this like sort of like deeper thoughts experiments that I don't all, you know, obviously necessarily know exactly what I'm talking about. Nobody does here, but it feels as if there is a set of rules, like there's some sort of it's gatekeeper type stuff. It sounds, again, if you're a skeptic, it sounds like you're just trying to give like a scapegoat answer. It's like, yeah. no, it seems like they can't always give direct answers, uh-huh. but they will let you know that they see you and
yes.
they see what's going on in the room.
Yes, yeah. yes. We had the weirdest thing where every time I did it, it was whenever George Floyd was murdered, it was right before George Floyd was murdered that I started doing it. And I was feeling this like tension. And when I was, every single session that I would do, I would hear, it's coming, it's big. I swear there was like, it would talk about police and murder. And it was crazy. I was like, this is not comforting. I don't know what it was that was coming through. It could have been my own, like, you know, it could have been my own subconscious for all I know. But yeah. every single time we did it, I did it with different people, it would do that same thing. It's
Wait,
coming.
But that's not true because you didn't tell me that. Oops. And I had heard it's coming. And you, even at the end of that session, you were like, I actually had heard that.
Oh. Oh,
do you
okay.
remember that?
No.
I do, because I okay. was like, wait, what? Uh-huh. But.
And then, you know, I mean, not that civil unrest hasn't been going on for 100+ years, but it was like it, immediately following that, it just everything just blew up. And it was crazy. And I was like, I wonder if that was, I don't mm-hmm. know, but it seems very compelling.
You sit back and it's like, and then you think like, well, was I listening to AM radio and that's all they were talking about? And you're like, well, is this, or is it bits of music? Or is it, as long as people are sitting on a really, as streaming it as fast as they can. I usually recommend if you're in a rural area for more AM stuff or maybe urban, more FM, I mm-hmm. kind of flip back and forth, mm-hmm. but I'm telling you, there are things. And I think if you guys would agree with that session, if you're recording stuff, there's not always stuff that's on the box, which mm-hmm. is crazy because
yes.
you go back and you're like, no, I definitely heard that voice.
Yes.
It's because your mindset has changed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've my mind has been blown recently just thinking about what does, you know, if there are multiple dimensions, what does that even mean as far as what time means and who we are and what is death even and all these things just all, you know, they all seem to tie in together, though, because at first you think, oh, everything's so separate. Mm-hmm. Then you start reading more and learning more and you're like, everything is absolutely tied together so much. I can't even stand it. You know, just reading the Mothman prophecies, it's like so much of just, I don't know, just general belief and life that's like in there where it's like this could explain so many things. And also, like you were talking about confirmation bias, you know, so that is heavily plays heavily into a lot of that whole story John Keel's whole story. Yeah.
It does. Yeah. I didn't listen to the episode, but I saw the title of it was like Mothman, probably just a bird. So I was like, oh, they're not into it.
No, okay.
We are into it.
That was very sarcastic. I was poking fun at the people that said it was probably just a crane. Because there's no way.
Crane,
that
could... Don't worry about it. I love that.
No, that's what we do. We poke fun at the people who are like, oh no, it's a weather balloon.
You can call this episode Connor J. Randall, probably just the radio or something.
That's the title of our episode. Thank you, Connor.
Thank you. Yeah, no problem. Took the work out of it for us.
It's the whole Mothman story. I never expected to be as involved in my life as it sort of turned out to be.
Yeah.
But it's a really cool case of high strangeness that is still ringing true and is still like haunting that town and that area today. Mm-hmm. And it's the people who were witnesses are still alive. I mean, you can go out there and talk to them. Like that's what we did in the show. Like just hit them up. Yeah. They're on Facebook.
Good idea.
That's a great idea. We should have done that for the episode. Yeah. Damn it.
Well, there's plenty more to do.
I know there are.
Well, it has been really awesome to talk to you. I don't know if I'm cutting it short. It's me and my awkward goodbyes that I'm just like busting in here. But yeah, I mean, we could talk all day, I'm sure. But, you know.
Yeah. Whatever you guys want to chat about, it's all good. Or we can call it a day. You don't have to make people listen to things for like 2 hours or something like that.
But we do.
Much better than some some interviews that just pop on or like radio stuff.
Okay,
like, Connor, so you believe in goblins, huh? And then
are you weird or what?
And you try and talk for 2 minutes and then you're done. It's like, okay. Sorry.
Well, then I won't be so awkward. I'll just continue. I'll talk a little bit more to you. But do you have religious beliefs? Like, do you come from a religious background? And is that kind of a personal question, perhaps?
No, I was born and raised Catholic and still consider myself Catholic. I think that there are certain like aspects of Catholicism that I'm a lot more interested in and like carrying into my beliefs in the paranormal. And I think that the church, quote unquote, like shuns a lot of beliefs and has like really hardline rigid beliefs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I've also found, I guess, sort of my own way of going about it, of like, there's something cool about like ritual prayer and like having sort of these like saint deities, these individuals. And so I sort of take that aspect into the paranormal life as well, I think. I am a faithful person. And I think that it's weird to me. And not that you necessarily, of course, have to be like Catholic or even Christian like that.
Yeah.
But when people are investigators and they're like not necessarily, where it's like, well, where are you pulling a lot of this from? Or are you just wondering like the rest of us, like what happens to us now?
Yeah.
It's an interesting eclectic mix in the paranormal.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. We were talking about the ritualism of Catholicism last night.
Yeah.
And how there are certain things that are very ritualistic.
Well, any religion, really.
Any religion.
Yeah.
That's very interesting that you just said that, because we were literally just talking.
Yeah.
About
well, cool. Because for example, my mother is super like Southern Baptist, and she is anything that has to do with like magic, paranormal, anything, it's like it's a huge no-no. And in conversation, don't talk about it in the house. Like, she's not into it. Mm-hmm. But then again, I find it hard to believe that she doesn't see that like doing a daily prayer in the morning and doing it at night and all the different things that go into religion, it's all the same. We're just picking and choosing different ways to go about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I've come around to, because I used to be like, I'm an atheist. I'm, you know, diehard atheist. Mm-hmm. And then as I've gotten older, it's like, but there's so many things that are going on.
How can you be? Yeah.
Yeah, that they're in continuously going on and in similar circumstances that are happening with all, you know, it's so hard to just say it's, there's nothing there. There's something there. Whatever it is, we're all just interpreting it as something. You know, it's probably
we all think that we have a certain way of, and obviously I think I wouldn't practice it if I don't. I think that my way is maybe like more correct than this way. And that's the case for like everybody.
Yeah.
But I've talked about this a lot with like Dana, who's a practicing hedge witch, you know, and she has a lot of things, a lot of ritualistic ways
of course
that she connects with something higher in the world. And there's a sense of beauty to that. I appreciate.
I do too. I've begun to, as I've gotten older. I've definitely, yeah. It's just being able to find your own way to do it, mm-hmm. I think, is the key to finding, to finding that, like, more, whatever it is. And hopefully, hopefully that's going to lead to me being able to experience a little bit more ghosties or whatever.
I think you're on your way. It sounds like you're, like, really... really on the lookout really hard. It's funny. I hope that I can, one of the things I like to express is, like, paranormal stuff is in theory sort of all around us, mm-hmm. that we don't have to go to the one of the top 10 most haunted places or whatever and spend the night. Mm-hmm. It's there. So when you guys do Estes, you could even do it in your house.
We do.
That's good. Yeah. How many people are afraid to do that? It's so strange to me.
Well, see, we've gotten people that, like, warned us, like, stop.
Don't do it in your house. And I'm like, I mean,
it's okay, guys.
Why not?
See? And you're going to practice, right?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
So many people, they only investigate when they show up at some place. It's like, well, you're not getting any better unless you're practicing and stuff.
Exactly. And that's how I've kind of started to realize that might be the key to all of this stuff is, just like anything, you have to cultivate that skill and learn how to do it and learn how to be present in that situation. Because I think that's a lot of the time that's our problem.
That's my problem for sure. That I'm like, I'm not getting anything in 3 minutes in. And I know that you're like, get 30 minutes in minimum and then really start.
Yeah, you're good.
And
yeah.
I'm like,
you're
3 minutes. Well,
and you're losing it and you're losing patience. It's hard. That's cool. When it happens in terms of, like, paranormal experiences, the moment is usually obviously so fleeting. How insane is it that these things apparently occur to people for, like, minutes at a time? Like, anything that I've had that I consider crazy is like 15 seconds max, you know? And when you're in that instance, usually your first thought is like, oh, this is a real person. Like, we've interviewed people where it's like, they're watching a UFO and they're rounding a corner driving their car. And they're like, look at that gigantic silver disc. Blimps are crazy these days. And then it dawns on them and they're like, oh my gosh, I just saw somebody getting abducted. Like, strange, whatever sort of mental blockades are put up for our safety, or a hole is poked through it, or something occurs in the level of consciousness there.
I've wondered how many times do any of us encounter something that may not really be what it appears to be, but we just don't realize it because we're like, oh, that's just a dude over there. You know, we don't even think about it. Yeah. So that could be happening to us. Who knows? I've had a million experiences by now, and I just don't know it.
You tie this to your Mothman episode. Apparently, Indrid Cold just looks like a guy.
Maybe a little weird, but
no. Like, just strained. Yeah. Like, he just smiles like...
Oh gosh.
A happy dude.
A real happy, creepy dude. Well, I don't know if he's creepy. Who knows? I mean, I don't know.
One of my favorite Indrid Cold stories, because you guys would probably agree in this, the sort of bizarreness of this. In Derenberger's book, if you haven't read it already, if you're doing this stuff, Woodrow Derenberger wrote, like, Visitors from Lanulos. Mm-hmm. Apparently, his wife was not really into the whole thing and was intimidated or not necessarily against, but didn't like this Indrid character. Allegedly, according to Derenberger, Indrid Cold showed up at the lady's, at his wife's doorstep while his kids were home and knocked on the door. And was pretending or posing as a vacuum salesman and had a conversation with her. Did you hear that? And then at the end of the sales pitch was like, by the way, I'm Indrid Cold. Like, now you're not scared.
I love that, because he also appeared as far as, like, in the Mothman prophecies was concerned. He appeared, like, within the crowd that was, like, trying to find him. He was like, what's up? It's me.
So cool.
And I, like, love that. He was like, hey.
Just pulled up to the house and was like, nobody was, because he didn't look like a giant glowing green man or something. No one realized.
Hilarious. Yeah.
Who would have known, right?
I love it. You know, I haven't read that book, but I really am looking forward to covering that at some point.
For sure. Yeah. Like, we would have, I mean, we have to. There was so much about him that I was typing and typing and researching. And then I was like, this is almost its own episode
for sure
unto itself. Yeah. For sure.
And now we have our own very own expert that we can consult with.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
No, fun. Thank you.
Ink and black or yeah, isolated still.
So it's a is it a family affair with you? Does your whole family kind of get behind you on this situation?
I mean, when I was younger, my parents would, for birthdays and like celebrations and stuff, would like give me like and my friends a night at the Stanley and stuff like that. So they've been embracing
that's
it.
That's pretty
a
cool.
Time,
that's really cool.
Yeah. Which is good. Yeah. And you know, siblings would ghost hunt with me and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And then when I started dating my girlfriend, like one of the first like 10 questions I asked her while I was like just messaging her was like, what are your thoughts on extraterrestrial life? What are your thoughts? You know, like this is an important
very important. Yeah. It is actually, I think it really is.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you really can be with somebody who doesn't see life as weird as you do.
Well, you probably could be, but it wouldn't be.
Could,
I don't think you can grow. I'm
exactly.
like, yeah,
uh-huh.
you can't
exactly.
grow together with this as much as you might want.
We noticed, and I've talked about this a couple times, we've noticed people who are not into it on those Stanley tours would like ruin the vibe for everybody mm-hmm. else. There's a very real thing to that.
Yeah,
for sure.
The group's got to be into it. Got to be vibing. Got to have that good energy. Mm-hmm. Something being sent out there in order for communication to be reciprocated back. It's important.
I think that might be in general, but we don't realize it. You know, in life in general, there's the bad vibes that are ruining everything. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. So try to get them out of your lives, and out of your ghost hunts. Okay. All right. We're gonna let you. We are gonna
let you
go off to your evening. Thank you. thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. We had a blast talking to you.
Oh, 100%. And everybody listen to Hellier. If you liked our Men in Black episodes, our Black Eyed Kids episodes, Mothman episode, you're going to love Hellier. It's filled with tons of synchronicities, with tons of stuff that you were like, oh, that sounds like Mothman. That sounds like Bigfoot. That sounds like everything. So
thank you.
Go watch that.
Do you have anything that you want to mention?
Yeah, check out hellier.tv. That's where we have all the episodes. We made it ourselves. Like I said, it's super available. So it's on Amazon Prime. That's where we prefer people watch it if given the choice. Okay. But if you don't have Prime, we also put it up on YouTube. So
okay.
So check it out there too. And I'm happy to chat anytime.
Awesome.
Thank you
so much. We're so excited. We'll definitely talk to you soon.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Night.